This is episode number 766 of the Secret Identity Podcast. And today in What's New, we're going to be talking about Matt's trip to Northeast Comic Con. We're going to talk a little bit about some upcoming shows, as well as Marvel Generations and the Make Mine Marvel Initiative. Our comics this week will be Giant Days number 24, Detective Comics number 950, Batwoman Rebirth number 1, Captain America number 12, and The Wildstorm number 1. And our Out of the Long Box this week will be DMC number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
Good, clean, wholesome fun.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, one night only, Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I am doing well now. I'm doing real good now.
Yeah, I'm working on my intros. I'm trying to really just I want to ramp it up to the point where you are so pumped that you flip the table over right as we get started.
Because we did do that about a month ago.
Yes, we did do that. That was unintentional, but very entertaining nonetheless.
Yes, it was. So I was shocked to wake up today and look on Facebook and see a picture of a young Brian and Maddie at a show those many years ago. Actually, it was a free comic book day, I think.
Wasn't it like 2010 when that happened, which is 7 years ago now?
Yeah.
As crazy as that is. Yeah. It's been a very surreal week in that, first of all, what Matt's talking about is, you know how Facebook does those throwback pictures now. Every time you go on, it's Facebook memories, and they say, well, if you don't say anything, then this won't show up on your page, but if you want to share this memory or whatever, and they pull a picture that you posted years and years and years ago. So it was a picture of you and I at a table with the same gear that we have. I think it was the same gear, right? Wasn't it our mixing board and stuff like that?
Yep.
That we still use to this day, except we were recording on my laptop and not my iPad. At Most Excellent Collectibles in the Enfield Square Mall.
Yes.
Which, and that was circa 2010. So we're talking 7 years ago. It was a free comic book day. We were in sort of the front window area there.
It was an atrium kind of setup because we were getting blasted by the sun and had to keep getting up because it was burning us. We were sweating to death.
Well, and it was like an all-day show.
Yeah.
Like we ended up hanging out there for most of the day and throughout the course of the day recording like little segments here or there, or sitting down with one of our creator friends or something like that and talking about, you know, what's going on and what they're there for and all that kind of stuff. And so that was super fun, but also a little bit depressing. And, you know, because of course we were both younger in that picture and I didn't have any more hair back then than I have right now, but you can just tell we're two young whippersnappers,
that's it.
You know, doing their podcast thing. But on top of that, that was very timely because I have been doing a refresh and an update of the Making Ear Candy podcast book this week. And so I've been going through because I put that out in 2013 and a lot of the, it's not a very technology heavy book, but the stuff that I did put in there, a lot of that stuff has changed.
Yes.
A lot of the podcast directories and podcasting platforms. One example, back in the day, Microsoft actually used to have support for podcasts in like Zune Music and stuff like that. That doesn't even exist anymore. Mm. So there are things in the book that need to come out and things that need to replace them. And so I've been doing that and just going through and seeing when the book came out, it was like, yeah, we've been doing this for like 8 or 9 years. And now it's like 11 years.
Yeah.
And oh, we just posted our however many show. And now it's like we just posted our 750th show. And so it's been a trip down memory lane the past week or so. And then that picture came up this morning and I was like, well, I have to share that.
Yeah. And you and I have got some very surreal, weird stuff. And a lot of this, thankfully, because of the podcast. But I was telling you earlier today that I was texting Tracy G, who was a guitar player for Dio for 3 or 4 albums, made some of the more heavy, aggressive stuff that Dio ever did. And then all of a sudden, I'm on a phone call with Jimmy Bell, who was a guitar player for House of Lords, was the runner-up for Ozzy's gig that Zakk Wylde got. And just found out in the chatting, he was the runner-up for Paul Gilbert's job in Mr. Big.
Which is crazy.
So he's always had that. But talking to him, I'm going to sit down with him for an interview tomorrow morning. I'm going to drive down to where he lives. And it's just really weird when you look at that going, huh, yeah, I just talked to two awesome guitar players. And it's like nothing.
Well, not only that, but like it in the – one of the things in the podcast book was basically about like, hey, you never know what could happen by putting yourself out there and yep. doing a podcast and all that kind of stuff. And so to think about some of the crazy stuff that's happened over the years and is still happening is kind of bonkers. Like case in point, the Thrash It Out show that I do with Anthony Johnson, when we first started talking to him, he was literally like the first guest that we didn't know that came on the yep. show back in the day. He is on his way down to South by Southwest right now to watch a screening of the movie that was just made off of his graphic novel, The Coldest City, which is now called Atomic Blonde, with Charlize Theron and freaking James McAvoy.
Not too bad.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And again, just somebody we met through doing the podcast and have become fantastic friends with. It's amazing, the friendships, the relationships, and all that stuff that have happened. So a little trip down memory lane for the old men this week as pictures are popping up and books yeah. are being revised and guitar players are being talked to.
The latest episode of the Carbonaro Effect featuring Michael Carbonaro.
Yes.
Another person from the very early days of Secret Identity.
Crazy stuff. So yeah. But let's talk about what you did this past weekend, Matthew, because you went to the Northeast Comic Con, and this was not your first trip to Northeast Comic Con, but was it in a new location this year?
It was a brand new location. Uh-huh. It was in Hanover, Mass. And if you don't know the way Massachusetts is set up, you have the Cape, which is kind of, you have Boston, you have the Cape, and then there's everything else. So you kind of, before you get to Boston, you go down towards the Cape. And if you think about the way the Cape kind of jets out, that part of the beginning is Hanover. So it's an hour away from the Cape, but it is the beginning of the Cape.
Sure.
And we were up there. It was probably one of the coldest days I can ever remember. It was whipping cold, not to mention the Atlantic Ocean is like two streets down from where we are. So it is super freezing cold. The show was Gary Summers, who does these shows. This was his first time in Hanover. It was at the Hanover Mall, not the old Hanover Mall. Hanover Mall, which the JCPenney that was there was recently closed down. So we had the show in the JCPenney.
Nice.
So we were cracking up the entire time. You know, hey, where's Alex Simmons? Alex is set up in ladies' wear.
Right.
Where is Mick Foley the wrestler? He's over in appliances.
Yeah.
I mean, that was how we were setting this whole thing up. It was a great, very well-attended show. There were tons of people there. But you are starting to see the fact that a lot of people now just go to these shows for the aesthetics. They want to look around at things because there were trails of people. And you start seeing after a while, when you do these shows, you start noticing like, oh, that guy just walked by for the fifth time. Oh, seen that lady 20 times before. This was a show where it didn't change. Like you were seeing different people all the way through, which was great. I sold a few books. Amy and Keith, we shared a table together. They were doing well. Talked to George O'Connor in the bathroom about his big gig coming up pretty soon. And we all had a great time. We went out to dinner. There was about 20 of us, the Hebert brothers, Karen Goslin, and sort of the crews there, Joe St. Pierre. We went to Moe's. I've never been to Moe's before.
Got to go to Moe's.
That was good stuff. But I think we're now getting to the point, or at least I am, where a lot of these shows are almost just the reunion. Let's see our friends, hang out and have fun. If we can make a little bit extra money. I mean, basically we covered table and had money for dinner.
Right.
And I guess that's really all you can ask for.
That is
for
really kind of all that you can hope for. And if you get anything above that, then it's sort of gravy, right?
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. I mean, we've talked about the whole con fatigue thing before. We've talked about how the sort of wizard model is a slippery slope that a lot of shows have sort of continued to go down at the peril of both the show and the creators who are lining Artist Alley because they're not making any money yep. and not making their table money back. So I think we're going to continue to see that be a problem. What we're seeing now is that there are a lot more one-day shows that are starting to pop up, these smaller shows that are taking place in towns that they haven't been in before and mm-hmm. things like that. We talked about Plastic City Comic Con last week, and that show has grown from year to year, but we have one coming up, Broadbrook Comic Con
yep,
in Broadbrook, hometown. Connecticut. Smaller shows, one-day shows, reasonable prices for creators, a new audience coming through, and very focused on the creator side of things.
Yes.
And so it's interesting to see where these mid-tier shows like the Northeast Comic Con are going to – what they're going to do over the next few years and how they're going to fare over the next few years, because there's a lot – we're on the bubble
right now. I absolutely agree with that. And I wrote two stories for the website, one that I deleted by accident and couldn't rewrite, so I left the picture up. But you and I have always talked about the fact that – we were wrestling fans growing up when we were younger. We certainly don't follow it now, maybe with a little bit of a curious eye. We see who's where. And anytime we're at a show, we kind of gravitate towards the wrestlers because they're a riot. They're amazing people. They're a ton of fun. So I did a story on there because at this show, I get to hang out with Mick Foley a little bit. So I got a picture, Karen Gosselin and I got our picture taken with Mick Foley. We got to talk to him. I had my Doctor Who book with me. He's like, oh, you know what? I do a lot of stuff with kids, and I go online, find out he doesn't just do a few things with kids.
He had a second career as a children's author.
Yep. He's a New York Times bestselling author, works with kids, and he said, I've got a toolkit that I bring with me. And he goes, my magic wand is the Ninth Doctor sonic screwdriver. And because most of the kids don't know.
Sure.
But he said, it's getting a little harder now because they are starting to know. So I said, are you a Doctor Who fan? And he's like, yeah. And I went back and got him a book. Autographed it for him, gave it to him, and then I was with Chris Hebert, and we were walking through because he was a huge Mick Foley fan, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's sitting down reading my book. So I snapped a picture of him reading the book, and it was funny because Chris said to me, I don't think he's reading the book. I think he's looking at the pictures, more specific, my picture. So great guy, a lot of fun. Those are the kind of moments that you just can't get anywhere else. And, you know, we look forward to the shows, but it's sad because we start to feel like the best times at the shows are behind us.
I think, too, one of the things that you see at a lot of these shows is because there's so many now. It used to be like if you went to the one show that came through that was an hour and a half away from you or something like that, that was your only opportunity to see a Mick Foley.
Yes.
That was your only opportunity to see one of the comic creators that you wanted to see. Now, if you miss them at Northeast Comic Con, you just have to wait another month, and the next month they'll be at this show here.
Literally, he's going to be at Super Mega Fest.
Well, there
in
you
April.
Go, right. And then a couple months from now, he'll be at a show in New York, and a couple months over here. And it just feels like because there's so many shows right now, and a lot of the guests that are coming through them are the same guests that you see at other shows, that's another reason that you're not seeing people like spend as much money at cons and stuff like that. It's because they've got a million other opportunities to see that particular person. So it's taking a little bit of the shine off of it of like, oh, this will be my only chance to meet this particular person. Like it used to be New York Comic Con is my only chance to meet this particular actor or something like, and that's just not the case anymore.
No.
Like you'll have plenty of opportunities. And for a lot of the people who live in an area where a lot of shows come through, they're going to see them 2 months from now. And they're going to see them 2 months after that. Yeah. And so it is, but I don't know how you solve that problem. I mean.
And I blew off a wedding, if you remember, to go meet Roddy Piper.
That's true.
The wedding and marriage ended up in divorce a couple years later. So I think I got the better of the deal.
You definitely got the better end of the deal because I saw that picture again the other day of him with the two of us in a headlock. And
it's on my phone. I love that picture.
That's one of my fondest memories of all. That is one of my all-time favorite.
Yes.
Secret Identity memories is that day in general and that moment with him.
So. What a great guy.
Yeah. So apparently this is the nostalgia trip today.
Yes, it is.
All right. Let's move on, Matthew. We do have a couple more shows coming up. Avon Con coming up April 22nd at the Avon, Connecticut Public Library. You and I will be doing panels there. We'll be hanging out all day long. There is a free comic book day event happening at the Forest Park Library in Springfield on the 6th of May that I will be at. And of course, on April 1st and 2nd, Connecticut Gamer Con happening at Mohegan Sun. I will be there for both days. You will be there for, at the very least, Sunday.
At least Sunday, maybe both.
Yep. So we have those coming up. So lots of stuff going on, and this is just the beginning of the springtime as we head into full-blown con season now. Let's talk about news for a second, Matthew. First of all, congrats to Riverdale.
Yes.
Because Riverdale just got picked up for a second season on the CW, which I don't think there was any doubt. It's been very well received so far, and it seems like it's gotten decent ratings over on the CW so far. But it's nice to know at this point in the season because then you know there is the opportunity to tell a longer story.
Yeah.
If it didn't get renewed or if it got canceled or something like that, then they're trying to wrap everything up. Now they can play some stuff out for the next season of Riverdale. I'm excited about that. I love Riverdale.
I was so excited and getting teary and misty with the whole Archie and Valerie thing, because that is one of my favorite
sure.
comics. Dan Parent wrote and drew one of the best stories that kind of helped my oldest daughter and I connect on some really interesting levels, but great to see that. And I love the fact that people that you don't expect to be watching and loving Riverdale are really loving it.
What blows me away is people who start watching it and are not realizing that it's yes. the Archie like that they don't realize that there's yeah. this whole universe of comics there that they can go and check out. My favorite thing about Riverdale is it is absolutely a precursor for Afterlife with Archie. And I love it. I feel like I'm watching the prequel. And it just makes me so excited because I hope they go there someday.
Everything's so over the top, too.
Yep.
And it's great.
Awesome. Bleeding Cool this week talked about a potential deal between DC and Amazon, Matthew.
Oh, boy.
Bleeding Cool got the word from sources who have recently participated in a very extensive online survey that indicates DC Comics is testing the waters on a digital comics subscription service. Comixology and Marvel already have their own services, limited regarding the comics that they offer, though. It appears that, as ever, DC Comics is finally catching up, but they have a new twist. One survey completer tells Bleeding Cool, since I'm in the U.S., all questions, pricing, etc. were based on U.S. stores, so I don't know what the rest of the world looks like. But it says the questions indicated that DC is testing the waters on features to include price points, levels of exclusivity, with other platforms, etc. Features noted were existing DC-based TV shows and movies, original short-form and long-form content, digital comic access, discounts on merchandise, subscription box service discounts, and behind-the-scenes content. One source recalled a question was asked what I would consider a small number of issues and an extensive number of issues to include in such a database. Price points mentioned in the survey range from $5.99 to $12.99 a month. So that's the headline, is that Amazon and DC may be teaming up for some sort of a DC content subscription service. And from these questions, it may go beyond comic books
yeah.
to DC television shows, DC cartoons, DC merchandise, all that kind of stuff. So what do you think about that?
It is amazing to think, kind of throwing something out there that we don't normally think about when you work at Amazon. I have a friend that I work with that just interviewed for a job with Amazon Studios in California.
Right.
So the portfolio for Amazon is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they already have everything in place where they can do this stuff. Merchandise, yeah, it's all on Amazon. You can get that. Comixology has already set up the databases and all that sort of thing, so Amazon can just move into that. But now I'm thinking, hey, maybe there's another job path for me at Amazon. And you've got Amazon behind you. And we had a meeting last night, in fact, talking about joking, saying, you know what, in another 5 or 10 years, basically it's going to be Amazon running the entire world. And we all kind of went, ha, 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 but half of us went, I got a feeling that that's going to happen.
Well, I think what we're seeing is the continuation of this idea of a la carte content, mm-hmm. right? So instead of having to, and we're almost at that point now where you really don't have to worry about what's on TV tonight.
Yep.
Because you can watch it on demand, you can wait until the season comes to Netflix or whatever. But when you see a deal like this get made and you think about the ramifications of all of DC's properties, then you could see a point where essentially the DC television shows are no longer on Netflix.
Yeah.
They're all on Amazon Prime streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an Amazon Prime member, and maybe if you subscribe to the DC package, then you get a subscription to 3 different comics a month. You get access to all the TV shows and all the cartoons, and you get to pick a particular piece of merchandise or something like that. That's what they have the ability to do.
Yep.
And I think if they do that, you're going to see some people who would never consider themselves digital comics readers or, you know, something like that, or sort of one publisher subscribers or something like that. I think you're going to see people jump to something like that.
I would. I am the target audience. I'm the guy that is not into the digital anything, and they want me because for the most part, you are already reading digital comics. I'm
right.
not. So they need something to get me in there, and
right.
this is the way to get me in there.
Right. And so then you have to imagine that Netflix would go after a Marvel.
Yep.
You know, and they already have a strong partnership with Marvel and Disney. Netflix does, which is probably one of the reasons that this deal is sort of in the making. But you can. But the thing is Netflix can only provide you with video.
Yeah.
Whereas, as we just talked about, Amazon can provide you with everything.
You want your shirt because you just watched Arrow.
Right.
There it is. Go get it.
Right. Are you a Prime subscriber? Then this new omnibus edition of this particular comic that came out, you get an additional 20% off of that.
Yep.
So you could see it, whether they throw it to you as discounts, whether they throw it to you as digital subscriptions to certain titles or whatever, they can offer a ton of different packages. And I would do something like that if the price was reasonable. Like right now for Comixology Unlimited, I want to say it's $6 a month. That's very reasonable.
Yep.
Given the amount of titles that are being added to Amazon Unlimited all the time, you get tons of first volumes of particular runs. So you can read the whole first volume of Faith from Valiant Comics, and then you can decide afterwards if you want to go and buy the rest of the issues on Comixology. Like, that stuff works very well. It's a good feeding ground for them. I could see them doing a lot with this type of a subscription. Yeah. And everything is moving towards that now. Xbox just announced this past week that they're going to do a thing called Xbox Game Pass, where you can subscribe to a service where you will be able to play a library of titles on a monthly basis. Like, this is where we're going.
Yeah. You think about when I started working at Amazon, and the rumor was Doctor Who, because it was leaving Netflix. Like, it was slowly being pulled off of Netflix.
Right.
And people were like, oh, I think it might be going to that Amazon thing. Yeah, they'll never get it. They'll never need leave Netflix. There it is.
Yep.
It's all there. So exclusive content of big geek items is obviously there.
Right. So interesting news. We'll be following that a little bit more closely as time goes on. And by the time you hear this, something else may have happened with that. Now on comic book resources, Matthew, because that's actually a good segue to a post that I made on Secret Identity this week about needing a change. And I posted about the fact that in the past, I have made several attempts to move to digital.
Yep.
I've talked about it. I've written about it. I would say I'm probably half digital now, maybe a little bit more than that. But I still buy a substantial amount of print comics on a monthly basis. And I feel like this is the last year I'm going to be doing that.
Mm.
Because for a variety of reasons. Number one is because most of my print comic purchases are with the big two. Most of the digital stuff I read is from other publishers, save for some particular select titles. And there are some stuff that I buy in trades that are from other publishers as well. But the majority of my print floppy purchases on a monthly basis are from the big two. And overall, I just don't know that it's worth my money to continue to buy the print copies of these books, because when I think back about what I'm going to keep, and I'm starting to purge my collection a little bit,
yep,
a lot of this stuff I'm not going to keep. Mm. Even the stuff that I'm reading and enjoying right now, it's not keeper material. And so I'm kind of shifting into this mindset now of, if you are not keeper material, then I shouldn't be buying you in print.
And I'm starting to feel like that too with a lot of those books, that if I was able to get it digitally and get the same out of it, as long as I'm getting a few print, because I do need, as a collector,
sure,
I do need to have that. But I could easily look at five or six Marvel titles, like Daredevil is officially kind of off the list now. I'm not getting Daredevil anymore.
Yep.
But I would get it digitally for $1, $2 an issue.
And that's the problem, is the price point still isn't where it needs to be.
It's not where it should be.
But I will probably always, as long as I'm reading comics, period, I will probably always collect a Spider-Man book, if not multiple Spider-Man mm-hmm. books, because that is truly my collection. My collection for the long term is basically the 2099 universe and Spider-Man books.
Yes.
Everything else is expendable in that particular collection, save for certain one-shots or certain collections that I've now bought in trade. Because if I really enjoy a collection, I'm buying it in trade to keep on my bookshelf now. Mm-hmm. So like Anthony Johnson's Umbral, that went two volumes. Those two volumes are sitting on my bookshelf now. Craven's The Last Hunt is sitting on my bookshelf right now. Like, that stuff is making its way to my bookshelf, and it will be in my collection permanently. But I am sort of shifting away from buying print comics, and I feel like that path is going to quicken this year unless something really changes. Because as I read the news that I'm going to read you now, I wasn't excited about any of it.
No.
So let's talk about Marvel Generations, Matthew. When Marvel Comics first teased Generations, all we knew was that it would involve a number of the publisher's growing cast of legacy characters, and it featured some really nice Alex Ross artwork. I don't know if you've seen the teaser image for
this. Not yet.
But basically, it's the summer event that's happening this year. Whether it was an ongoing comic, a miniseries, or an upcoming line-wide publishing initiative remained a mystery. Now, keep in mind, we have heard rumors of the Marvel reboot that is coming, right? Now, thanks to a new listing on Amazon,
yay,
the curtain has been drawn back on the project, if only a little. Once upon a time, and so this is the synopsis that has been given for Marvel Generations on Amazon. This is the cover blurb. Once upon a time, a skinny kid from New York picked up a shield and charged into battle. A prodigal son lifted a sacred hammer and proved himself worthy. An arrogant genius forged an armor that would harness his true potential. And together, they became Earth's mightiest heroes. Today, that heroic legacy lives on in the next generation of heroes, and it will be put to the test as the Marvel Universe's greatest champions unite and charge headlong into tomorrow. Now, that sounds like a Flashpoint event to
yes.
me. Yes. This is the summer event that is going to reset the Marvel Universe, is what this sounds like. Now, the synopsis, which CBR confirmed with Marvel, is official, doesn't reveal much, if anything, about Generations' plot, but it does confirm that we're looking for a new series or event to arrive in the summer rather than a Marvel Now-style publishing initiative. It's also a good bet that we would expect a miniseries rather than a one-shot or an ongoing. The hardcover collection description does not mention a specific volume number, indicating that's a one-and-done release. Nor does the text reveal a creative team for the series, leaving us wondering who exactly is behind the project. The use of the word champions in the description, along with a specific reference to the origins of several Avengers, combined with the lineup illustrated by Ross, might indicate that this is a team-up featuring the Avengers and the new teen team, the Champions. But again, that's reading the tea leaves and doesn't account for characters like Jean Grey or Phoenix, or the two Wolverines pictured in the original teaser. Answers to the remaining questions are likely coming soon, possibly within the next few weeks, when Marvel Comics' May 2017 solicitations are slated to arrive. So, big universe-changing event happening this summer, and then we have what's being called Make Mine Marvel. Okay. So over at Bleeding Cool, Rich Johnson wrote, I am told spinning out of Emerald City Comic-Con that as part of Marvel's upcoming Make Mine Marvel relaunch in the autumn, that rather than relaunching with a load of new issues, number ones, instead we will get a load of new legacy numbers. The old school legacy characters will return with issue numbers that will add up all the issues published of that character's central series so far, including all relaunches. This is coupled with the news that we read a couple weeks ago, which was that the rumors were that Marvel was going to be returning to less politics in their books and more of the traditional superheroes that people seem to have been clamoring for over the past couple years. And so it all signs now point to Marvel reboot event over the summer, getting back to basics in the fall with Marvel's legacy characters.
I hope they do. I think it's funny when DC did the New 52 complete reboot.
Uh-huh.
That was a reboot, and everybody freaked out. And then initially it was successful. So Marvel kind of looked at it and said, you know what, we're going to do a soft reboot. And that was sort of inconsistent, all over the place, very inconsistent. And then when the New 52 birthed into the DC universe right now, what we have, now Marvel's looking at it and everybody's loving it. Now Marvel, I think, is looking back going, maybe it is the hero part of the hero that people want. Maybe it is the dude in the colorful uniform punching things. Maybe it is the girl that is, you know, as strong as the guys around her that is really just doing a lot of awesome stuff. I hope that that's what they do, because I would love to pick up Captain America 645 and continue off with just a cool character instead of what I'm going to be talking about in a little bit.
So I am going to play – I'm not even going to play devil's advocate here. I don't necessarily agree with you. And Daryl and I had a good conversation about this on Facebook the other day, because this seems like what's coming.
Yeah.
Right? There's going to be creator changes again. There's going to be new, you know, teams coming back to books. I would imagine there'll be announced some big creative teams that are coming to particular books and stuff like that. Two things bother me about this. Number one, the industry creative team thing is like the NFL coaching carousel.
Yes.
Right? We're going to see the same names that get recycled for big projects coming on again. You know, you knew this guy from this and now he's overdoing this. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think that we need a lot more new blood in the industry. And so I'm fearful that we're going to go back to a lot of traditional names. Not that I don't love many of the creators that I grew up reading and many of the creators that have really made a name for themselves during the time that we've been doing this podcast. But it's very recycled a lot of times in the industry. The other thing that I don't like about that is that I think Marvel is taking the wrong message from what is happening at DC. DC has something that Marvel doesn't have, a longer legacy.
Mm-hmm.
DC can play that card. And this is me talking. I could be talking on my butt and nobody agrees with me what I'm saying. I feel like if you are to say to me, of the big two, which one, when I say legacy, who do you think of?
Oh, you definitely think of DC.
You think of DC, right? Is that fair to say?
Yep, because Marvel is technically 60s.
Right.
DC is the late 30s.
So if you are, quote unquote, getting back to basics, that means very different things for DC and Marvel. What DC did with Rebirth, in many ways, was getting back to basics, but also keeping the best parts of what came before. You know, you have Batwoman leading the team on Detective Comics. I'm going to talk about Batwoman Rebirth today. You had some creators that they picked up through that process, two of which are writing Batwoman Rebirth, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But they really went hard on the legacy characters that they have at DC and restored the fans' faith that they cared about that legacy, right? To me, in many ways, Marvel's legacy is the opposite of DC's legacy. It is a legacy of change.
Yep.
It is a legacy of having comics that were more grounded in the real world and dealing with real world issues and stuff like that. So for them to take the message that, you know, doing political stories or going in that direction is the wrong thing to do with Marvel Comics, I kind of feel like that is what Marvel Comics is all about.
Mm.
So I don't know that they're taking the right message from this. I think the message that Marvel should be taking from whatever's happening right now and the success that DC has found with some of the Rebirth stuff is that if you tell good stories with the characters that you have, then people will respond to them. And Marvel's biggest problem, in my personal opinion, is that they have not told great stories over the past several years. And so that would be the message that I take out of this. Like, not that we got to go back to basics and we have to go. No, we have to tell better stories with our characters because we're not doing them justice.
They're relying on the characters and their buying appeal more than the actual what you're going to put
in everything
there.
In the gimmicks. Everything is a gimmick.
Yeah.
Like, let's have Captain America be a Hydra agent. I guess. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't. I mean, I know where he's going with that storyline, but at the same time, like, is that the best choice for Captain America? Mm. Like, is that fundamentally changing who Captain America is in order to tell a story with shock value? I'm sure by the end of it, he's going to bring that story around and maybe it'll be looked back upon as one of the better stories in Captain America or whatever. But I just think it's that they're not telling that great of stories with the characters that they have.
Mm.
They're not exciting right now. Marvel is not exciting right now to me. And this is as a longtime Marvel reader.
Yep.
You know, as I just said, coming out of Clone Conspiracy, I felt like that ended a little bit flat. I still think Spidey's probably the best stuff that they're doing over there. And the Spider book, especially Spider-Woman, one of the best books they have going. But they're just not exciting me. And when I read this stuff about let's do a generations thing and let's kind of get back to basics, if that's what it is, that is not appealing to me at all. I'm not looking for them to go backwards. I'm looking for them to go forwards.
Yeah.
And so if they're going backwards, that's a good time for me to exit stage left. And that helps me. That was what really got me thinking about, like, I'm spending how much money on this stuff and this is where we're going again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of all set with that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not looking for that to be the case again. I have those stories.
Yeah.
I have a lot of the traditional stories.
Yes.
I'm kind of okay with that. So I don't know. I'm kind of at a crossroads. I am finding much more enjoyment out of a lot of the books from other publishers that I'm reading lately. And that's a great thing. There's amazing comics being made right now. And there's some super fun comics being made right now. Many of them outside of the big two.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. And we've talked about that for years on Secret Identity. But as someone who came up on Marvel, I'm not excited about where Marvel is right now at all.
Nope.
So that's going to affect my print comic buying in the future.
Yes,
for sure.
It will.
All right, Matthew. My beard has grown longer as we've had this discussion. Thank goodness I have Viking oils to take care of that beard as it grows. This is the part where we talk about Viking oils, LLC.com, right here, because it is still windy outside and it is still dry outside and my beard is still looking awesome. And I'm taking this beard to an Overkill concert tomorrow night in all of its majesty.
There you go. And I have had to start using my beard balm because I got some
You just stuff lather here. It all over your face because there's an errant here, hair, you know, here and there across your face. You just throw the whole thing on there. It's like looking at somebody who has chapstick all over their face.
Yep. I lather myself up and I will be bringing this to Uli John Roth at the Chance in Poughkeepsie, New York Saturday.
That's an Uli John Roth beard you got going on right there.
It definitely is. Yeah. So www.vikingoilsllc.com. Find out what you need. Get yourself ready. Get yourself looking good, smelling good, and feeling good.
How's all right. That? That sounds fantastic. I'm going to let you kick us off with comics, Matthew, because I was going to get one off of my tablet and I realized I haven't even started it yet.
Oh, boy.
So I need to boot this thing up. So you go ahead. This is the folly of digital comics right here.
There it
you
is.
You start us off with Detective Comics. Is that where you're going?
Detective Comics number 950. And it was funny last night because after I read this one, I'm a little bit behind in the detective ones. I read this one and went, wow, 950? I haven't read a comic book at number 950, and then I picked up Action Comics 972.
Uh-huh.
So apparently I have read something beyond 950.
And that's legacy numbering, Matthew.
This is what I want. If you remember, we can play back the tapes. I said, I don't care what DC does, as long as they bring Detective and Action up to the numbers that they need to be. Because as a kid, when I bought Action Comics number 500 at my grandmother's house, I remember getting on a calculator, and with my crappy math skills, figured out when issue 1000 was going to be. And I was telling my grandmother, who is no longer with us, I can't wait till I get there, Grandma. I can't wait to read issue 1000 of Action Comics. And then they took it from me. They took it from me and my grandmother.
So legacy numbering is important to you.
Very important to me.
Okay.
I really like that. So here we are with the oversized anniversary special. It's the League of Shadow prologue. And we have had a couple issues of what is going on in the world of the Bat Family and Detective Comic is Cassandra Cain. It's Cassandra Cain, right?
It's Kate Kane.
Kate Kane. Kate Kane, Cassandra's our other character that we've been talking about. Kate Kane's father, who was the one who put this whole team together, we start to realize is not the guy that we thought he was. He was a bad guy looking to kind of do some bad stuff with his team, capture Batman, do some stuff that
this is the dad.
Yes.
Wow,
this is
okay.
Her father. So this was not a good situation because with Batwoman, it was her father who was so instrumental in getting her to this level. And to have him turn out to be kind of a jerk is not the right thing. So we have Robin who's dead, or Red Robin, I should say. The team is kind of in splinters right now. And you have this young girl who is running to a dance studio. And as she is getting in there and dancing, she all of a sudden feels somebody behind her and she sees that it is Batwoman or Orphan as she's now being called. Now for Orphan, when she was Batgirl, her powers were the fact that she could read somebody's fighting skills like a second into the fight and sort of take on those skills. So she could take on somebody who had 20, 30 years of training because she would just pick up where they were. And with her youth and her experience and her anger, she just kicked the crap out of everybody. That works with everything. So she's there dancing, doing ballet with this woman. The woman freaks out. She drops down something. And then as it walks away, you find out this woman is Christine Montclair. And she starts narrating it saying, you know, I guess I do believe in ghosts because ghosts actually exist. So you've got Cassandra, the orphan who's kind of going around, and she is going over and she's talking to somebody and she's saying what happened, that she went over to meet this girl to go dance with her, just to go dance because that's what she wanted to do. The woman saw her, she freaked out, and now she's starting to feel really alienated everywhere and all the things that are going on. Next, you go over and you get the bat signal. And what I love about this is as she is sitting up on the roof, she sees the bat signal. And then you turn the page and you see that Commissioner Gordon has the bat signal on. And he's there lighting something, and he looks at Commissioner Gordon. He's like, so what's going on? And Commissioner Gordon says, trust me, this one wasn't my idea. I can think of a few dozen things I'd rather be doing right now, namely sleeping. But this is what's going on. And you see that the mayor has called to the commissioner to get Batman. And he says, you know what? The mayor's there talking to him, saying, you know what? I've done some pretty bad things during my time. And Batman's like, is this a confession? And he goes, no, 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 it's not really, but it's a way for me to talk about some of the things that were going on that I really think we need to fix in this city. And then Batman's like, get to the point. And he says, look, I looked out the window and I realized that I may be dying, but underneath the table, I realized that the history books aren't going to be very kind to me. So I want to do some things and clean this city up, and I want to have a solid legacy. And then as Batman is – he puts his hand out to shake Batman's hand. And my wife has always told me, never trust somebody with a pinky ring. And the mayor has a pinky ring, so I did not trust him. Batman didn't either. And then somebody – it was Cassandra who was up there watching this all go on. Commissioner Gordon pulls the gun and says, oh, it must have been a ghost. And she goes, hmm. So now you have Batgirl or Orphan going out and just beating up people all over the place. And one of the things that's going on is, if you remember when we were – years ago when we were reading Batgirl, remember Shiva?
Yes.
Shiva was coming down and she was going to take out Batgirl. Well, Shiva is back and there's some issues going on right now where she's just trying to get herself ready. She's trying to figure out what she's going to do. And just trying to find a home with this team. And now we go to Batwing and Clayface. And this is also a double-sized issue, by the way, for $4. The Clayface has now gotten a injection that can make him more human. But the problem is that the more he's human, the more his brain is going to become foggy and a mess and really affect him as Clayface. So he now has to play around with that. Like, do I want to be human? But since I can't hold it, I may go back to this monster that doesn't have a brain, and I may be stuck like that. So you're seeing sort of the issues going on there. You've got Batwoman who is out there kicking the crap out of things and talking about the fact that she might have to be doing some of her own things, which will be interesting with one of the books that we are going to be talking about or that you're going to be talking about. And that's the end of that story. And it was League of Shadows, so this was the end of that one. And we have James Tynion, who is the writer. Marco Takara is the penciler. And or he was the artist. Dean White did the colors. Now, the second story is sort of – it's called Higher Powers. Alvaro Martinez is the penciler, Raul Fernandez the inker, James Tynion writes this one as well. And we are seeing Azrael as he is talking about things. He meets with Batwing, meets with Batman, and you're seeing that although the team that we might have first started this book with is kind of falling apart.
I thought Azrael got killed.
He's back. He is back.
Okay.
He is back.
He's back.
So okay. this is the Azrael. It might have been another Azrael that died. But this is the Azrael, that Jean-Paul guy that was the original Azrael. He's there in his full uniform.
And that was Nightfall, right?
Yeah,
Came into play?
Yep. Yeah. And so he is talking about all the things that he wants to do. And then you have another story called The Big Picture, which seems to be another part of where this whole thing is going to continue, because it says dark days are coming in 2017. So a great anniversary issue, which is, I think, sometimes the way you got to do it. You're ending one story, you throw kind of something in the middle, and then you begin what's going to be your next story arc. So it's a lot of fun. Again, $4 for a double-size issue. I'm really liking Detective and where it's going.
I'm going to stay with DC, Matthew, and I'm going to stay with Batwoman for Batwoman Rebirth number one. Now, this is written by Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion IV. Steve Epting does the art here. Jeremy Cox does the colors. Darren Bennett the letters. And it is edited by Chris Conroy. Now, you know that these Rebirth issues are basically a zero issue.
Yes.
And so that's what this is. And what it does is a pretty nice job of bringing you up to speed of where Kate Kane has been, where she is right now, and a glimpse into where things might be going in the future. And so the last time that I read Batwoman consistently was when, was it Rucka?
It was Rucka and
J.H. Williams III,
J.H. Williams
right?
III.
When they were on the book and they ended up leaving the book, because they were not allowed to have Kate and Maggie get married in
yes.
the book. And there was the big controversy. And then the book kind of petered out after that. So I'm excited about this book coming back. And I'm excited about the creative team on it, because Marguerite Bennett has, over the past 5 or 6 years, become one of the best writers in comics today. James Tynion IV right there with her. And they kind of came up together.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have the guy who's writing Detective Comics working with Marguerite Bennett and writing Kate Kane, a character that they both absolutely love, and I could not be more excited about that. And plus, the artwork.
Epting is amazing.
Right. So, and I don't know if this is his first DC work in a while? Or
it's going to be in a while because he's been basically
he's been a Marvel guy, right? So what you get as you open it is you get sort of this collage of Kate over the years of where she's been. And the whole book is basically giving you her origin story from the time where they were kids, where she and her sister were kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And she believed that her sister, Beth, I believe her sister's name is, was dead.
Yep.
Because her mother was killed during that time as well. And her sister was allegedly killed.
They were like kidnapped by terrorists.
Yeah. And she got rescued. But it was this super traumatic experience. And she saw basically her mother and sister die. And so then later on, she joins the military and we see her at age 20 and you see her falling for one of her fellow soldiers. And she ends up getting kicked out of the military because she's having a homosexual relationship and then has to basically has to leave because she's not going to compromise who she is. You see interspersed with that her partying tendencies, because as we met her in the beginning of the Batwoman comic books, she was kind of in a rough place mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, really being into drinking, really being into partying. And you're seeing some of that socialite stuff mixed in with a lot of the military stuff there. And so you're seeing these different facets of her life and how she is, it's all sort of coming together in a crash course. And then you see a glimpse of a time where she was in the island of Koriana. 80 miles off the coast of Malta when she was 23 and they call it the lost year. And she is with a woman named Sophia and you only get a brief glimpse, but it seems like that's a time period in her life, almost like the flashbacks in the show Arrow,
mm-hmm.
where they're going to go back and fill in. Well, what happened to her during this year when she left the military, but hadn't yet returned to Gotham? What did that year of her life look like? They're going to delve back into that. Then we see when she's back in Gotham and she comes back to town and she runs into Renee Montoya. And you see that they sort of rekindle a relationship that she had. Then we fast forward to age 24, where you see her run into Batman. And as that's happening, you see in the background her training with her father. And you know, working on her fighting skills and reading up on strategies and starting to become the person that would become Batwoman. And then now you get to the point where you see her as Batwoman. And you see her out battling the Monster Men and you see her leading the team in Detective Comics. And she's having this conversation with Bruce at one point when he's saying, you know, why do you do this? You know, you're calling yourself Batwoman. Tell me more about that. And she says, I'm not complicated. War took my family. I lost one way to fight back. She's talking about her time in the military. Then I found another. And she says, tell me why you fight. Tell me what I'm missing. Tell me how to do this better. And you're seeing her leading the team with Spoiler and with Orphan and with Red Robin and with Clayface on it. And so you're seeing how she is continuing to evolve as a hero. And then in the aftermath of the Monster Men, you see Batman saying to her, Monster Venom has arrived on the black market outside of Gotham. And I need you to basically take on this mission. And you see then another montage of everyone in her life, past, present, and future, kind of questioning where she's going and what she's doing and what her purpose is. And then we get a little glimpse into the future, and it's not at all a future that we would imagine for Batwoman. And that's the way the issue ends. And it leaves you with a lot of questions about what that lost year was like and what the future holds for Batwoman in this corner of the DC universe. And it is an origin issue and a recap issue. It's only $2.99, which is really good. And if you haven't been reading Batwoman or you dropped out at one point like I did, it does a really nice job of catching you up on who Kate Kane is, who are some of the major players in her life over the years, and what is the current status going on with her in sort of the Bat family. It's just really well put together. Again, you could tell from this first issue that Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion IV have a very clear vision for what they want to do with Batwoman moving forward. And Steve Epting's art is fantastic.
Yes.
Jeremy Cox's colors are fantastic. This feels like a creative team that is a perfect match for this book. And I'm very excited about that. So I will be picking up the ongoing series. And as you listen to this, it's either the first issue might be out now or it's coming out very, very soon. It's coming out before the end of March, I believe.
I didn't pick it up, and after hearing it and completely forgetting that Epstein was doing the art on it, I really want to go and pick it up, because I was somebody that when the character was originally introduced, I was not really enamored by her. I didn't think that there was a lot of depth. Then when Rucka and Williams III really just started getting a nice run with it, I completely fell. Like you said, they left the book and it really was not very good. It was basically just another superhero. And that's not what Batwoman is. I'm more into her personal life than I am her fighting crime. So it's going to be nice to see that if this book can keep going and have some legs.
I think we're going to have, I think that one of the visions that Tynan and Marguerite Bennett have for this character is they're going to give her that backstory.
Yeah.
They're going to delve into that. I didn't realize, as you were talking about with the Detective Comics book, that her father went in a bad direction.
Yes, he did.
Because there, you know, you're sort of seeing in here, you're just seeing that conversation between, like, are you going to follow him or are you going to follow me? And it doesn't necessarily show him being a bad guy in here. So I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I'm going to swip over to the Marvel Universe for Captain America. I should say Steve Rogers, Captain America, number 12. And you've got sort of this skeleton dude on there going, I know your secret. So you know that some bad stuff is coming up. And it starts out with a newsreel. And I love when you see these old black and white newsreels, because when I read them, I go right into that voice of, oh, there he is, the Star-Spangled Avenger. And
I always think of that Mr. Show skit, elevator, yes. Right up and down. Thank you.
He is married. David Cross is married to who? And they just had a baby. And they gave her like this crazy 15 weird goofy name things. I'll find that one out. You said Mr. Show, right?
Mr. Show.
Okay, so that's David Cross.
Bob and David.
Yes. So you're seeing Captain America and he's fighting the Nazis. And you have a thing in here where it gets a little weird, because right into it, it says, thanks to the super soldier program and the genius mind of Dr. Arnim Zola, a weak, sickly busboy was transformed into a fighting man like no other. Now, the world doesn't know that that's his origin, and Arnim Zola was not a part of that.
Right.
So we see that before, in the last issue, he killed or shot Dr. Erkstein. So what is going on with this? Where is this issue? What is happening? So you're seeing history was changed, and or at least as far as we know. So you see Cap there. He's taking up Nazis. Bucky's there. They're shooting up some stuff. And he's saying that he's fighting the armies fighting the Third Reich and their allies like Hydra. So you go to this and you've got Baron Zemo is talking about, you know, how they're sharing how he leads his army. And you see this crazy looking mech army in World War II. And behind the scenes, the Red Skull's pulling all the strings. And then you got Captain America jumping into action. And now we go to now, and you've got Qubit, the little girl who is part of the Cosmic Cube.
She's
the human entity.
She was in the Thunderbolts, right?
Yep. She's a human entity of it. And Dr. Selvig, which most of us will know from Thor, that guy, he is kind of a bad guy now. He's working for the Red Skull.
He was the guy that got put under the trance with the Cosmic Cube stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So he is there. He's working with the Red Skull. Kubik has been doing some amazing goofy stuff with the Red Skull. Like the Skull, she's manipulating the Red Skull. The Skull's letting her do it because he needs her power. So you you see Cap and Baron Zemo show up in the same room, and they're talking to the doctor about all this stuff going on. And he's like, look, I've got to get back to S.H.I.E.L.D. because I'm now the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I'm trying to get Sharon Carter to be the director, but I need to go over there. So we need to make this quick. And they're talking about basically trying to break into the secrets of the Cosmic Cube. So with the Cosmic Cube able to bend reality, I'm starting to see and wonder if that is what's going on with this whole reveal, with this whole thing. I'm still now thinking deeper and deeper that the Cap that came back in Cap Rebirth is not the Steve Rogers
right
that we thought.
And I think that's the more likely thing.
And
this guy's not that Cap.
This guy has got the implants, much like Ben Reilly, where Ben Reilly, didn't he think he was Peter Parker?
Yes.
So that's what I think is going on with this, which would explain a lot. And now you're getting sort of a view of what is going on, and it's Taskmaster is the Skull dude on the cover. He's there. You see that he is holding a copy of the Daily Bugle, talking about Cap as the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they just kicked out Hill. And all this stuff is going on, and he's saying, you know what? We need to try to take care of this, and we need to try to take advantage of this, because this could work to our advantage. If we take out Cap, we take out something pretty big. Now you're on the helicarrier, and Sharon Carter's on the bridge with them, and they're talking, and Rick Jones is sort of the communications guy for S.H.I.E.L.D. And
he's Rick Jones?
Rick Jones.
As in A-bomb?
Yes.
He's no longer A-bomb, though, is he?
I don't think so, because he's not A-bombing over here.
Remember he was the blue armadillo Hulk-looking guy
for a while? That's right, he was. So he says, hey, we got something going on in Trafalgar Square. There's a bunch of Doombots, and we've sent a team of Hulkbusters
who will
be en route in 12 minutes. And they're over the thing, and Cap says, you know what? I'm going. So he jumps out and heads down there. And what is going on is you have the – what is this? It used to be the Super Adaptoid, but it's the – I forgot his name, but he is like a big square head gray monster thing.
That's not the
– is that the Super Adaptoid? Or he's an Adaptoid. So he's in somewhere like Central Station ready to start ripping stuff up. He and Cap get into a fight. And then you flash back to Cap and Bucky fighting Hydra soldiers. And then he is meeting Helmet – or seeing Helmet Zemo. And they're having kind of the this is how we're going to do things. This is how we're going to do things later on, Cap. This is how it's all going to work out. And I remember where it is in here. So let me just make sure. And, of course, it's not in there. But I believe it was a Super Adaptoid.
I'm going to say it is because I think that is the Super Adaptoid.
So as this is going on, you now have Taskmaster who is working with these three other people and they're talking. And before it was basically them talking about how they were going to take advantage of the situation. Now they're looking to form an allegiance. And they're saying that we could be a super villain team that's mercenaries, but he's not a racist. And then all of a sudden, Hydra agents show up and zap them. And when they go down, you see that there's a woman with them. And you look and thinking, oh, that might be the latest Madam Hydra. And as you are going on, you're having more flashbacks with Cap and Zemo. And if you remember, if you're reading this book, you meet Elisa, who is the one that gets Steve's mother and introduces her to the world of Hydra and all this stuff. So she's kind of the catalyst in this whole thing. And as Cap is fighting this Adaptoid, he takes it down. And then you've got Taskmaster, who is now being held by Hydra. And you have Madam Hydra walk in, and you find out that it is that Elisa Sinclair woman who they met, who we met 60 years ago. So apparently this woman is not aging. She is in charge of Hydra, and that was a little bit of a weird reveal in that one. So, and I mean in a good way, but I did not see that one coming. So you have Madam S.H.I.E.L.D., Madam Hydra, who's now collecting bad guys to create this team that is going to go out and cause some issues and problems. And then that is where the issue ends. And you also see that this story can loosely be expanded upon in Thunderbolts number 11 and Uncanny Avengers number 22, which I'm not reading either one of those.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Do you want to see if I can give a code?
Absolutely. Do it.
I'm going to see if I can give a code away for...
three random comics.
Deadpool Back in Black trade paperback, Doctor Strange Volume 3, Blood in the Aether premiere, and Wolverine versus Deadpool.
Is it just like a teaser for each one?
Redeem the code on this page for free digital copies of the first issues.
Okay.
So you're getting three issues.
All right.
So it's not too bad. So here is your code, marvel.com/redeem. F2M756ZGNEG3. Had to spin that one around a little bit.
Well done.
So, yeah. So if Marvel can do anything for me, make them darker, make them bigger so I can read them and not have to worry about it.
Okay.
So you're getting three comics.
Well, I'm going to wrap up our time in the DC universe at the fringes of it, Matthew.
Yes.
We're going to talk about a book called The Wild Storm.
Interested.
As was I, although, again, not for any other reason than I knew the name Wild Storm, obviously, but hadn't really read a lot of the old stuff. So, of course, The Wild Storm is written by Warren Ellis. The art is by John Davis Hunt. The colors are by Ivan Placencia. Letters by Simon Boland. And it is edited by, it says, assistant editor Brittany Holzher, group editor Marie Javins. And so my understanding is that Warren Ellis has come back to DC to write a 24-issue Wild Storm series. Okay? But it's apparently nothing like any of the Wild Storm stuff from before, like the Authority and all that kind of stuff, which I didn't read a lot of. I knew that back in the New 52, they brought some of those Wild Storm characters back in. So you had like Midnighter had a series.
Midnighter and Apollo.
Grifter had a series. I believe The Authority had a series, and I might have read a couple issues of The Authority, but I know none of these characters. I was not around in reading these comics for the legendary run that Ellis had before any of that stuff. So I'm all new to this, and I'm kind of excited that he's doing something completely new. After reading the first issue, I think it would probably help to know a little bit about these characters. But let's get into it, because we start, Matthew, with a woman who is in a dirty-looking bathroom washing blood off of her hands. And over her back shoulder, you can see that there is a guy whose face is in the toilet, and he's covered in blood.
Nice.
And she taps the comm in her ear and says, "Zealot to Division. The interview went badly. Send in the cleaning team."
Zealot.
Mm. So you see Zealot right away. And what's cool is that here she has the white hair, but she has very short hair and she's wearing a red trench coat. And for a moment, she has a blood streak across her face that looks like her original face paint.
Nice.
Now, I only knew that because I've seen pictures of her before. But she wipes that off pretty quickly, which I think kind of gives you the nod that this isn't necessarily the Zealot that you knew before. As she's walking out of the bathroom, you notice that this gentleman, who now has less than a full head and is leaning over into the toilet, has one, two thumbs on his hand and six fingers on his hand. So something was off about this guy. But she's coming out. She runs into the cleaning crew guy, and the guy's like, "Oh, look at you." He's like, "Lucy Blaze, it's been an age." And she's like, "Look, we're in the field. You use my code name." And he's like, "Oh, you know, sorry about that, Zealot." And they go in and they start doing their cleanup job. Then we cut over to another part of New York City, and you have a young woman who is saying, "This is the place." And she's on 9th Avenue. And she is looking up at all the digital billboards and all that stuff. And the person with her is saying, "You know, why here? We can get better real estate." And she's saying, "Look, this junction has significance." And she's talking about how this is a special place and they need to work from here. And as they're talking, one of the girls calls her Pris. And she says, "Don't call me Pris while we're working. Call me Voodoo." So apparently Voodoo, one of those characters as well. I don't know who the woman with her is, but they're looking up at a big billboard that has the guy's name, Jacob Marlowe, on it. And he is the CEO of a company called Halo, which is kind of like Apple in this universe.
Yes,
so,
that's now starting to come back to me a little bit.
So they're looking up at a big billboard, but in any case, Voodoo is saying, "There was a UFO abduction right here. Did you know that? And down that alleyway over there, there was a guy who turned into a bat in 1939. So apparently what she's trying to convey is that there is some mystical energies in this particular area of the city, and she's releasing a new album. She's a musical personality, and she wants the release to be advertised here. She wants them to do whatever they're going to do, the publicity event here, because this place has significance. Now, they're walking by, and it's kind of cool because you have all these sort of flybys of characters crossing each other's path. So they walk out of frame, and then sitting in front of a cafe is a guy saying, "Is that Voodoo?" And you find out that he is Miles Craven. Is that his name? Let me just double check real quick. I think it's Miles Craven. And he is the CEO of this company called IO. Yeah, his name is Miles Craven. And he's a main character, and he's there with his husband or his boyfriend, and they're having lunch and they're talking. And you can tell that he is this director at a very important agency as well. And all of a sudden, as they're talking, a woman starts walking down the street towards them, mumbling to herself. And this guy's like, "Oh boy, I don't know where she's coming from." And the boyfriend says, "Well, what are you talking about?" And he says, "She's somebody who works for me." And this woman comes over and she starts talking to him and is in like mid-conversation before she even introduces herself. So she's talking about, "Hey, Mr. Craven, you know, it's a great day outside, you know," and he's like, "Hey, Angie, how are you doing?" And she turns around to the boyfriend and says, "Oh, right. Hi, I'm Angie. I work for Mr. Craven. Do you mind? This will only take a second." And she's kind of babbling on and she's saying, "Look, I came to see you because I'm on the verge of a big breakthrough and you know that I do good work for you, right?" And he's like, "Yeah, you do great work for us." And she says, "Well, I need more resources and I've been trying to get a hold of you at the office and nothing's working and I really need you to back my stuff and give me more resources." And he's like, "It's a Friday. Even if I wanted to help you, like, we're not going to get anything done to next week." And as she's talking, he looks down and he sees that she's bleeding from like a wound in her abdominal area. Mm. And he's like, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "Look, are you going to help me or not?" And he's trying to have a conversation with her and she ends up basically telling him to screw off and walks away. So It was like one of those weird encounters with someone. And as she's walking away, she walks by Zealot, who walks back in the picture, and she's like, I guess it takes all sorts. So you're seeing like these cameos of the characters as they walk through. And now the story picks up and follows this woman, Angie, as she's walking down the street, and she walks by the front of the building that this Halo Corporation is from. And all of a sudden, a guy gets thrown out of the top window of the building. And as she's looking at him, she starts to change. And as she is staring, she starts to change into like a robot. It's almost like there's an exoskeleton underneath her skin, and it kind of rips apart, and she turns into this basically like this android robot thing, and jumps up into the air and saves this guy who's falling and catches him in a net and then throws him through another window, and he lands on the floor. And the next thing you know, he's kind of looking up as in what the heck that happened. And you see that it's this Jacob Marlowe. It's the CEO of this company.
Is he a big, tall, blonde guy?
He is a bearded, grayish blonde guy.
I think that that is the same guy from the original, from the second series that I remember.
So in any case, this woman saved him, and he's like, holy cow, what just happened? Thank you for doing that. And, you know, can I repay you? You know, what's going on? And he notices that even with the suit that she is wearing, or that's part of her or whatever, she's still bleeding.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're hurt. Why don't you let me help you? And she's like, I don't think anybody can help me. And she jumps out the window and flies away. And he gets on the phone and he says, call Michael. He says, Michael Cray from IO just tried to kill me. And there's something new in the world. We have to wake up the cat. And cat is an anagram for something. So now you see back at IO headquarters, this Miles Craven, who was just on the street having a conversation with this woman, is interviewing a guy that he sent to kill Jacob Marlowe. And he's basically saying, how the heck did you screw that up? What's with the dude flying through the window and somebody saving him and all this kind of stuff? You weren't supposed to throw him through the window. And this guy's explaining, I didn't throw him through the window. I went in and confronted him in his office, and there was a big explosion. And the next thing you know, the guy's flying through the window and I'm here. So we find out that this guy he's talking to, his name is Michael Cray. And I'm sure he's one of the original guys too. He has some sort of a power where if he touches any sort of bioorganic weapon, it causes this massive feedback. And apparently, Jacob Marlowe, who is in charge of this Halo company, is either some kind of an alien or some kind of an android, because he went to use a weapon against this assassin that came to kill him, and that's what caused the feedback, and that's what caused the explosion. So as the book winds down, you have this Jacob Marlowe guy who is talking to a woman who is another kind of robot or android. She's almost like a supercomputer, and he's explaining to her what happened and how this thing that saved him, this woman that saved him, is a new player on the scene. So apparently IO, which Miles Craven was a part of, and this Halo company are rivals and against one another. And this woman is like an X Factor now, who has shown up, this new robotic woman with her exosuit. And then we see that Michael Cray, the assassin that was originally sent in to kill him, he collapses back at IO headquarters, and you see that he is in need of dire medical attention. So maybe this was the first time that his powers had sort of manifested themselves. And so as it winds down, you have Miles Craven, who is figuring out that the robotic woman who saved the guy that he sent someone to kill is actually the employee that was talking to him on the street. And that's the way the first issue ends. So lots of stuff happening in this first issue of The Wildstorm. You have all the players, it looks like, from the original stories, but maybe not in the roles or the even the appearances that you knew them of before. But aside from all of that, you've got these two rival outfits. You have an X Factor on the scene. And you have a lot of sort of behind the scenes manipulating between these very powerful organizations. That in and of itself is enough to get me to want to read the second issue. But I really feel like I need to go back and now read some of the old stuff, or at least go to Wikipedia and find out about all these characters and stuff, because I didn't have any frame of reference while I was reading this at all.
I might have a Wildstorm, whatchamacallit,
a primer.
I think I do. I do have one that when they relaunched it, and I was reading it, because I didn't like the Image Wildstorm stuff. When that was coming out, I wasn't a big fan of it.
Yep.
But when they relaunched it with John Cassidy and Travis Charest and all these great artists in there, I fell in love with it.
Well, I would say this to our listeners. If you're out there and you're familiar with Wildstorm and you read all these characters before and you read the Image stuff and all that even before they came back to DC, point me in the direction of a run or a volume that I can read of these previous books that will give me sort of the rundown on what's going on. So, because I would like to know more about them. Now, before we go to our long box, Matthew, I have one more book for today.
Yes, you do.
Because I want to end our new books on a high note.
Oh, what was the price on that, by the way?
That was a $3.99 book. Now, the Batwoman one was $2.99. Yep. So I think this is going to be $3.99 because my understanding is that DC's monthly books are going to go to $3.99. Their biweekly books are still going to be $2.99. But the ones that are double shipping are $2.99. Yep. The once a month are going to be $3.99. That's my understanding of that moving forward. People can correct me if I'm wrong about that. I think this is going to be a monthly series, $3.99.
I think I'm
going to
pick that one up.
Or you can read mine if you want to test the waters, Matthew.
Yes.
I'll leave it with you and I'll pick it up next time. I know you're not big into that. You like to own your own copy of a story. I get that. I'm going to talk about a book from Boom right now that is my absolute favorite comic book, maybe of the last few years. I adore this series. It is called Giant Days. I have talked about it probably a few times before on this show, but it is my favorite book. I adore this book, and every time it comes out, I read it first. So issue number 24, this book is about three young women who are off at college and living together, and they could not possibly be more different. But the book itself is a very sort of slice of life look at what it's like to be out on your own and in college and making friends with people who are completely different than you, and just the trials and tribulations of living on campus, living off campus, all that kind of stuff. It really brings me back to the days that I was in college, and it is also hysterically funny. It is created and written by John Allison. The pencils from Max Sarin are wonderful, and the inks by Liz Fleming, absolutely wonderful. It is edited by Shannon Waters and Yasmin Amiri, and this book is just a joy to read. So we start off, and you have a character who is having a dream that she is on the autopsy table.
Ugh.
And you have this guy who is the doctor in her dream is the kind of douchey roommate of these guys that they hang around with. And he's saying, welcome back to Gross Anatomy, students. We'll be concentrating on the respiratory system today. And he's like, he says, may I present to you arguably the most diseased lungs ever seen in the British Isles. And all of a sudden you have Susan, who's the one having the dream. Her eyes open up and she's like, you know, I'm not actually dead, right? You are aware of this. And he's like, at this point, Miss Ptolemy, you're basically splitting hairs. And he's about to cut her with the scalpel, and she wakes up and she's coughing and her heart beating 1,000 miles an hour. And you can see that she is lying in bed covered in dirty tissues and snot's running down her face and just has been feeling like death. And this has been going on for a few issues now that her cold is progressively getting worse. She's a smoker. She's sort of the cranky roommate of the three of them.
Yeah.
And the one who just tries to ride everything out. And she's at a point now where she is in extremely bad shape. And is at the point where you're sort of begging for death when you're feeling that ill. And so she goes out into the living room, and her two roommates, Esther and Daisy. Esther has sort of this like goth aesthetic, and Daisy is like the Girl Scout leader. And so the two of them are out there having tea, and Susan walks out and she's lost her voice. And they're like, boy, you know, you got to go to the doctor. This is ridiculous. You've got a terrible bug. And Susan's trying to tell him something, and they're like, oh, I think she's trying to communicate. Why don't we give her a pen and have her write it down? And of course, they're saying, they're making all of these funny statements about what she could be saying, and she's getting more angry at them. In the middle of this, Susan's father calls, and she is basically writing down on the pad, do not tell him I'm sick. And of course, Daisy, who's the do-gooder and the one who can't lie about anything, she starts off trying to cover, saying, oh, yeah, no, she can't come to the phone right now. And then all of a sudden she's like, because she's lost her voice, because she's really sick and she's been in bed for days and she won't go to the doctor. And then all of a sudden she hands the phone back to Susan and she's like, oh, he's driving up to get you this afternoon. So this issue is about Susan's father coming to visit the girls at college. Now, at this point, they're in their sophomore year, and they are living off campus in an apartment. And they live next to a cranky old man who is always either calling the cops on them or watching them through his window. He's one of those neighbors that's always sort of watching them. So you have Daisy and Esther go to the store, and they come back, and in the driveway is Ptolemy and Son electrician's van. And coming out of the van is their dad. And he's got like a mullet and a mustache, very like blue collar, down to earth guy. And the whole issue is basically about him moving in with them for like 3 weeks as he nurses his daughter back to health and just what happens. Like, the girls on one hand are completely wanting to get rid of him because he essentially has moved in. And Susan is regressing. She's getting better physically, but she likes being taken care of. So she's not even getting out of bed, or, you know, and stuff like that. Meanwhile, he is making these amazing dinners every night. He's cleaning the place. He's doing all this. He's basically taking care of all three of them. And Esther and Daisy are basically like, we're becoming addicted to this. Like, this is too good.
Yeah.
We have to get him out of here because we'll never get him out of here if we don't. And much like this series does all the time, as the story goes on, you find out that there's a reason that he has been staying here so long. And one of the reasons is that he and Susan's mother have had a big argument, and he's basically been living in their camper in the driveway for the past few weeks. And he just cherished the fact that he could come and stay here with his daughter and take care of the girls and basically have it back to the way it was, because Susan has other sisters and stuff like that. It was a chance for him to get back into the dad role and really be wanted and be appreciated and that kind of stuff. And so he knows that he needs to leave, but he doesn't want to. But there's some great scenes. There's a morning where the two of them, the two roommates, are sitting outside the bathroom door, and all of a sudden he walks out and he just took his morning constitutional. And I'll show you the look on their faces. Like, there's vapors, and one of them she's saying that's flipping brutal. The man's insides must be made of brass. He's going to break the toilet. And the other one, Daisy, is saying, I could never have imagined the violence of a father's morning toilet. Like, just, that's the kind of stuff that I'm sitting in bed last night and I'm reading this and I'm crying as I'm reading this thing because it's so funny. But then it'll switch from these hilarious moments of just, again, everyday life and everyday college life and dealing with your parents and this kind of stuff to these touching moments like the conversation that Susan has to have with her father about what's going on at home and how he can't stay there with them forever and that kind of stuff. And at the end of it, they actually end up finding out, along with their dad, that their next door neighbor hasn't been peeking out the window for the past couple of days because he passed away in his house. And then they have this whole thing about, like, we never got along with him and, you know, he probably died all alone and this kind of stuff. And it's, the book just does this amazing job of going between touching moments, hysterical moments, and just perfectly capturing that time in your life where you're out and independent for yourself for the first time. But everything's a challenge, and sometimes you just need your parents and all that kind of stuff. It really is just an absolutely wonderful book and ends, you know, wonderfully with a little tease of what's to come in the future. And I cannot recommend it highly enough. We're 24 issues into Giant Days. If there was one book that I would tell you to go and get all the trades of, it is this book. If there's one book I would tell you to go buy all the digital issues of, it is this book. You can get it on Comixology. You can get it on Boom's website. This book is amazing. And if you want something that is hysterical and touching and uplifting and very nostalgic for your college days, holy cow, Giant Days. Absolutely wonderful book. I love it.
Now, who puts that out? Who's that?
It's Boom.
Boom.
And it's under their Boombox imprint.
Okay.
But this is one of those books that when we talk about Boom and we talk about the choices that they've made and the non-licensed work that they do and stuff like that. This is a book that is one of the best books that's being put out today, and people should be reading it. It's just absolutely amazing. I can't say enough about it. So there you go. That's your new books for this week. We're going to wrap up with our Out of the Long Box, Matthew, and you're going to talk about a book that you picked up a few years ago now at New York Comic Con.
I was just going to say, this one is 2 years in the making, and this is DMC from Daryl Makes Comics. Now, DMC and Daryl from Daryl Makes Comics is Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC. As his music career started to wind down, I just read his autobiography. I think it's called 10 Ways Not to Commit Suicide. And it's an amazing book dealing with the fact of, like, his career not going the way he wanted.
Sure.
And dealing with depression issues, things like that. The entire book talks about how comic books saved his life in his childhood and in his adult life. And this is a really big project for him, which has already spawned into a bunch of other books.
And if I'm not mistaken, we posted an interview that you did with him at this last New York Comic Con not that long ago.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact issue number off the top of my head, but there is a recent interview that you did with Daryl.
Yeah, and he is just an amazing guy. But when you read the book, you realize he brought up the fact that there were two things that are very important, actually three things very important to young black guys growing up in New York: comic books, karate movies, and music. Those were the three things. And he explains that comic books sort of gave you, especially Marvel, gave you a layout of New York City. You knew where everything was because, oh my gosh, Midtown, that's where the Avengers Mansion is. And everybody had these cool names, like the Amazing Spider-Man, and they all had problems like you did. Karate movies empowered the average person to be a little bit more than what they were. And then music obviously was a way for a lot of guys and gals to get out of situations that they were in and give them something to look at and kind of strive for. So this comic is it was $20, and it's a thick, fatty book. There are five stories in here, all big. The art is Chase Conley in the first one, Jeff Stokely in number two, Felipe Smith number three. Number four is Mark and Mike Davis. And number five is drawn by Sean Crystal. So the gist of this is this book takes place in 1995. And Daryl explained that this is way before – it's supposed to be if Run DMC never existed. This is the world of a pre-Run DMC. So, and they may not have even existed. So you're seeing all – it's called Rematch. And you're seeing that the headlines are all these bad things about violent vigilantes – vigilantes are on the rise. Crime is on the rise. People are afraid to go out. And it takes place in New York City. And you've got these young girls that are out there, and they're tagging subway walls. And they're just tagging the walls that are easy to get to. They're going down into the subway, into the tubes, really, really deep and doing something. And then as they're down there, all of a sudden this dude comes out of nowhere, and he attacks one of the girls. And as she is trying to run away, he's shooting acid at her. He's like this big dude and just nasty looking. And the art is very anime influenced in this particular story. So as the girl gets punched by the guy, she's down, and the guy's ready to go up and spray paint her. And the spray paint shoots out acid. And before she can, all of a sudden, an Adidas sneaker comes out and kicks the dude right in the face. And when the guy goes down, you see that it is DMC, the hero, that has come in and saved the day. He's telling this guy, you better leave. And the woman is narrating it, the young girl, and she's narrating it. And the other two of her friends are waiting for her, going, where is this girl? Why has she not shown up? She's supposed to be here. And as they're waiting, DMC is just pummeling this dude. And the best thing is that his weapon is he's got these two rings on each hand, and they cover the entire fist, and they say DMC on it. So when he punches you in the face, you get an imprint of DMC on your face. So not hard for the guy that's the bad guy that's walking around, but we'll find out one story. Not good for another. So you see now the news reports are talking about these young girls that were in the subway and that they were beaten down by this guy came after them, but a young hero named DMC came out and saved the day. And now you've got a gang where this gang member guy is capturing people, doing all sorts of bad stuff, not necessarily the best guy, has a little bit of superpower. DMC takes him out. And then one of my favorite ones in here is called Send Me an Angel, where you've got this young girl who is talking about how she was in a relationship with a guy. And when they first met, she really liked him. He was a great guy. And then found out that he was a drug dealer. But it was a little too late. She was pregnant. She was already living with this guy. And her entire life was tied up with this guy and his drug selling and drug addiction. She became addicted. She got pregnant. And in this, because of this, she had to give up her life that she had. She loved to dance, loved all this stuff. And every time she tried to escape him, he would come after her. And you see a scene where he goes in and starts going after her. And she is going to, you know, he's going to physically hurt her, take her down. And when he goes to punch her, and she's pregnant, and all of a sudden DMC shows up and beats the crap out of this dude. And she's telling the story and saying how that, you know, that guy saved his life. And then there's another couple stories in here where you're seeing how crime is just really influencing the city and really hurting a lot of people. And then you get to my favorite story in here where you've got superheroes that are all around the city. And there's these two, the superhero and a bad dude, that are ready to go fight. And the superhero, like a Superman, shows up, lands on the building. And the dude pulls out a gun and shoots him right in the face and kills him.
Whoa.
And he's like, oh, I guess he wasn't bulletproof. And they pull the cape over him. And people are watching this kind of freaking out going, I didn't think you could do this. And you see that this guy all of a sudden gets up. And you see that he is not a hero. He is a villain. And he is covered, you know, the hole that was just shot into his head is filling in.
He's got the old healing factor,
yep.
Matthew.
And then another couple of heroes show up, start fighting him, and then DMC shows up. And as DMC and he get into a fight, and he almost looks like Superior. Do you remember Superior?
Oh, yeah,
that
yeah.
Superhero, he kind of looks a little bit like him.
Yep.
So there's a big fight. He takes him down, punches him in the face a couple times. And my favorite part of the story is how the guy is in – and he's talking to his boss. And he's like, boy, you know, I thought that you were going to take this guy out. I thought that things are going to be a little different with you. And he's like, well, of course I'll take care of this and do the right thing. And you see a guy in a three-piece suit with the DMC logo on his forehead because he got pummeled by the dude. So that was the end of these five stories. You see that it's to be continued. I believe there's another trade that came out with the rest of the stories in there. And what I loved about this is you get that feel for the old school people in distress, people in everyday walks of life, a young girl in a bad situation, a couple of kids doing something that might not be the most illegal thing in the world, but still putting them in danger. You've got superheroes in there that may be good, but they really turn out to be bad. And it's a lot of fun. The different art styles are great.
Now, how long has this book been out?
This is 2 years old, I believe, or three years. But there's a great quote in the beginning that says, DMC has always been a master storyteller with a microphone. Now he's finally brought his gift to the paneled page. The king of rock has now become the king of comics, Kevin Smith.
Nice.
So these
Who
books,
did the art for these?
So there were five different guys. They're all people that I'm not quite sure of any of the stuff. Chase Connolly, Jeff Stoemely, Felipe Smith, Mark and Mike Davis, and Sean Crystal are the ones who did the art. The cover, actually, and the writing was not just Daryl, but you've got Daryl McDaniel and Damon Scott. Now, we remember Damon from his days drawing Batgirl. And if you remember, I did an interview with him at a Big Apple show where he talked about how Jamal Igel was his babysitter, or Jamal's mother was his babysitter. Do you remember that one?
That was early years.
Yes, that was very early. And Damon Scott is freaking amazing. What a writer he is. A great guy. I haven't talked to Damon in a while, but I remember him talking about the fact that Jamal's mother was his babysitter growing up. So the two of them spent a lot of time together. But one of the more magical parts of this book, and it shows you how much Daryl was influenced by great comic books. There's a cover gallery in here where some of his favorite artists all did DMC interpretations of classic Marvel and DC covers and some independents. So you've got this one, which I'm not exactly sure which book that is, but it was an independent book. I'm showing you, Brian.
Yep.
But then you turn the page and you've got, you know, X-Men. You've got Black Panther. You've got all these crazy, awesome things. Dark Knight Returns is another one where
nice.
Instead of Batman, you got DMC. Daredevil with Bullseye and Electra fighting on the cover. And you've got that one. You've got just some great, great covers. The Great Hulk cover with DMC holding up the logo. You've got, isn't that a Spider-Man cover?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Styles.
That's actually the black costume
yep.
cover. Yeah.
Yep. DMC, which is the Wolverine cover of an X-Men book.
Yep.
An old Daredevil DMC. Just a ton of fun. A Fantastic Four, giant size. So you see that his love of great comics, that one, and the one I'm showing you right now, that was Secret Wars.
Yes, that's the Spider-Man origin issue
yep,
of the black costume.
One.
The first time it appears.
Yep, a Captain America Mad Bomb one, just some amazing things. And I remember when I finished that up, I looked at that gallery and thought, that was worth the cover price alone.
Yeah.
Just those great covers. So a fantastic book. You can go to Daryl, let's see, www.dmc-comics.com. And Daryl makes comics on Facebook.
Okay.
So check it out. Great stuff. A lot of fun.
I will put a link to that in the show notes. You said it's dmc-comics.com?
Yep.
Okay. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And if I can find the episode number of the interview that you did with him, I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Cool.
So that is your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.